Hi everyone, and welcome back on the couch. In today's episode, the second and last part of this mini-series in English, my 18-year-old son, Sean, is back. We pursue our candid conversation about his experience as a young adult in 2022. We talk about the different challenges he's already faced, and some of which he is still facing today, and basically how he's trying his best to carve out his place in the world, doing what he can in order to create his ideal life. Pretty much what we all want, right? The mother-son relationship can be complicated. Well, any parent-teenager relationship has its pitfalls. But even so, I can definitely tell you that I feel incredibly privileged that this child chose me, that he is the one that decided to reach us first, and that he is the one with whom I became a mom. I really hope you're enjoying our conversation, and I now present to you the conclusion of our chat. Thank you for listening.
Like, I wanted to be left alone, but there is people all the time. When you show emotions, it interests people or something. Like, it's something like I never understood that. And it, like, I was bringing people to me when I never did, when I was showing emotions. I don't know if that makes sense. So
yeah,
that made me even like made me pissed off on top of everything. And it just wouldn't stop, you know? So processing an emotion took a whole day for me. It was a day thing. So if it was at 8 p.m., it would have lasted till I'm asleep. If it was at 8 a.m., same thing, you know. So if I had something like a little bit traumatic happen to me, it would have taken me the whole day every time to deal with it, like properly. And I can't work during that. I can't go to school. I can't study. I can't think. I can't do nothing. So just that, the fact that I was so, like, I was incapacitated daily for emotions. Like, that's, like, as a child that's going, like, beginning to start responsibilities and small stuff, like, I can't deal with that. Like, I don't have time, like, literally.
So basically, when you say coping mechanism, it's really learning to regulate your emotions. So
sure,
the emotion isn't bad. The attention, if you're getting positive attention, you know, people that are watching out for you or trying to help you, that's not what's bad. It's just, if you're talking about having it stretched and kind of linked to every other trauma. And so that's basically needing to learn to break it all down, not necessarily just rationalize it, because that can be just stuffing it down also, but just regulating it and self-soothing in a healthy way. So that kind of sounds like what you would have needed as skills, really.
Yeah, but I was doing that. It just took me the whole day.
Yeah.
It's a thing that took all my time. Like, if I wanted to be a healthy human being from the first day, I would have to lose maybe 200 days a year, every year. And that's impossible.
That is. That's, again, so that, the heavy, like, load here.
So if I were ever able, like, maybe not 200 days a year, but like, there's probably stuff that now would have traumatized me if I didn't build that wall through all that time. You know what I mean? So, like, I'm just like a more productive human right now because of that. Like, I just get more stuff done, even though it's not like a ginormous amount, you know. It's still like I can't wake myself up and go to work even if I'm not feeling good and stuff. So that's why
do you think it's just how you're made? It's just how you're built, and, you know, that's how you function, and you were basically, it was the cards that you were dealt. Or was there something else that kind of contributed to you having a hard time dealing with, you know, a regular, normal childhood in essence, or on paper, let's say?
I don't think so. It's not a traumatic experience or a moment that changed everything. It's always been okay. There. Like I can't remember a moment that I have experienced without anxiety. Like that is not impossible for me. I remember having anxiety at the kindergarten. So it's like,
goodness. Yeah. Because the thing is, when I realized that you did struggle with anxiety, so I'm seriously 13, not really, like, yeah. I really dropped the ball. I didn't see it at all before then. It kind of felt like, oh no, he has it. Like, because like I gave it to him.
Yeah.
And it was like a horrible, horrible feeling. I know it's not my fault because it's not just genetics, but it's also how I raised you, sure. You know? There was a lot of pressure when you were young and I was terrified of losing you and I didn't want you to go anywhere. So, I mean, for sure, I was a mom that induced anxiety, for sure. But there was also in the cocktail of how we're made. But the thing is, for me, I had a pretty cool childhood. Like, I don't remember dealing with anxiety before an event, before a few events, let's say. So when I realized that you were, and I mean, I'm not saying that you, and we're going to discuss your experience being seemingly different in school that might have contributed, but, you know, not having had any real traumatic experience that was like off the wall, like obvious and really, really hard for you to go through. So it was kind of, it took me back. It really did, because it felt like, he has always had that. Like, not only did I not see it, but where does it come from? Kind of, you know, and I don't know. It's really hard for me to.
I don't think people get that from an event. That's the thing. I most of the people that I know have anxiety, like been having anxiety, like it's not a high school thing, I guess. They've had it since they can't remember. Like that's the thing. Like, we're all stuck in there not knowing why. That's the hardest part, because we're just like that. And growing up, I thought everybody was like that, so I never talked about it. So that's just like, I wouldn't complain for nothing. Like, that's not.
And is there something that we can do? Because again, that's the idea with this episode. Is there something, you know, being the big people here and trying to, I mean, you're telling us this. Okay, so if we're all listening, and I hope we are, like really listening to you, is what should we do? How do we help? I mean, you're telling us basically, I mean, it's not like I'm learning it right now, unfortunately, but you're telling us, okay, kids are struggling.
Yeah.
Not all of them, but a lot of them, almost the majority, for sure. So what do we do? How do we help?
I mean, I can't even, like, I don't know. Like, I have no experience with kids. Like, just from that being so, I can't understand a child. Like, I can't even remember what anxiety was like back then. I just know something bothered me daily, and it was my thoughts. Like, that's the bottom of it. That I was more in my head. Like, I talked, like, how I thought about it is, like, I'm talking more to myself than I'm talking to anybody ever. Like,
that's what it is.
But
it
still, is. I don't know me. I don't know myself. I've talking to myself for years, like, no pause, like, straight years. And I don't know a single thing about myself. That was the most traumatic.
I cannot accept that. You know yourself.
No, I do. But until 13, okay. Not 15, like 14, 15, I didn't know a single thing. Like, my whole personality was internet-based, surrounding based, like what's cool right now based, like nothing was myself. I had nothing for myself.
But that's, I mean, that's what's hard about it.
Yeah.
That's what's hard. You're trying to find yourself. You know that first your parents aren't the shit. You know, I mean, there's a part of you that realize, oh, they're flawed, like really flawed. Yeah. And that's part of the deal. That's what has to happen. You're trying to find friends. So you're kind of trying to find people that you can vibe with, that it's that you feel safe with, even if you don't realize that that's what you're doing. Yeah. And you're kind of forging yourself as you go. So I think that part, I mean, that's why it's so uncertain and it's confrontational and it's a hard period because you don't have your bearings yet. You're trying to find them. So I think that part is normal, but there in weaved in the way that you're answering my questions, there is this element that is kind of heavier than it hopefully needs to be, let's say. So you can't tell me what you would have needed, let's say, to help you
get by
with a little bit more ease.
I can't even, like when you're a child, the only thing you want is like material things. And like I can't even remember what I would have said to you to this question back then.
Yeah.
Like if I was able to comprehend it at some level.
Yeah.
Like I don't even know if I didn't even know I had something different. Point blank, like I thought my thoughts are the same as everybody else's, and we all think the same. Everybody has the same psychology, everybody like has the same morals, and I just thought that was the world. So I never like asked about it because I thought that's obvious, you know, everybody's like that.
And it's weird because, and yet the way you're speaking about it is that you felt really alone.
Oh yeah.
So how do you, like, to be honest, again, if there are a few places in what you're saying, in your story, that's really different from me. For me, I thought I was the absolute only one going through this. I was the only one with that voice constantly, not only narrating everything, like always, like just this is a tree, this is like that ridiculous kind of voice that's constantly there because it is self-soothing in a way, in a warped way, but still.
Yeah.
But I thought I'm going crazy. I thought none of my friends are going through this. I have to hide this. Of course I have to hide this. I can't talk about it at all. If I tell my mom, she will freak out. Like I'm going to be sent away. So I felt really alone because of that. But on your end, what you're saying, and you said the same thing before in friendship, you felt like everybody else was going through it. And yet you still felt that alone.
But it's even worse, I feel like, but maybe not worse, but it's equal, because if you think that everybody thinks that, I'm not saying everybody's uncomfortable with it. I'm saying everybody thinks like that. I thought I was the only one that was uncomfortable with it. I thought I was the only one that was like bad tripping over my own thoughts. Like I thought everybody just listened to it and let that go. So that's why I was like I thought I was the weak one. I thought I was the still childish one my whole life, you know what I mean? Like I was the one that couldn't, like, I don't know, like get it together, I guess. Like
could you pinpoint, I mean, what is in those years, because thank God you're doing better now, thank God. That's how I'm getting through this interview, by the way. What would you say is the most difficult thing or a difficult period that you've gone through so far?
It's probably still this one, even if I feel better. It's the weirdest, because my whole life I thought, like, not my whole life, but like growing up, I thought people were thinking the same, where we were all going through it just like differently, and I was like having a bad time with it. I just had a rough patch or something, but like now I just get it. It's like it's there, I get it, it's like that, I can't do nothing. And it's like, it's not even, I don't have issues, I guess. Like I don't have daily issues, like big issues, you know, because I know people that do, like it was serious stuff, and I have to like go to work. That's my issue, you know. So it's like I see the bigger picture, but I still feel that way. So it's like, even though I can understand like the bottom of it, like the lonely, fake loneliness of it, everything, it's just still there. It's just,
yeah,
I still feel it. It's just, I can't understand it now.
But the thing is, I have a whole bunch of tools.
Yeah. You know this. I don't want those.
What is that? What, please, what is that? Your mom has tools. Okay, like, you know, we talk all the time. We live under the same roof. Yeah. I know you. Like, I know that I wouldn't suggest meditation right now. I still will. It is one of the biggest, most important tools. But, you know, like, I know you're not vibing with meditation right now. So, but I have tools. There are really, really tangible, easy, quick ways to help yourself with the anxiety. And you can't not believe me, I hope, because you see how much I've changed.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you come to me? I mean, unless you're telling me, no, you know what? I'm really good right now. But if there are times where it's a little bit more rough, like next year, for instance, in September, you're embarking on a very great, amazing adventure. There'll be some stress there.
Sure.
We've talked about it. So would you come to me if it got just even a little uncomfortable so I could help, or are you still stacking?
Like, I wouldn't say a little more uncomfortable, because I'm not comfortable. So that's out of the way. That's not even a question. But like, if it got worse, like straight up worse, yeah, I would. But like a little more uncomfortable, I can. Yeah, sure, promise.
Okay.
Like, if it got a little worse, like it's like,
if
I can't
manage.
I've dealt with it. I will deal with it. That's how I see
that. Thank you. You're just helping your mama out. Okay, so if it got to be just a little bit before,
yeah,
it got to be unmanageable, you would raise your hand to make sure.
Yeah, of course.
I heard you. Okay.
Yeah.
For the people that don't know me or haven't seen the videos, you and I are mixed, aren't we? So Jamaican in our case and Caucasian. So my mom is Caucasian and my dad is from Jamaica, is Jamaican. Your dad is Caucasian. Both of us are quite light skinned, but we are here in the very white suburbs considered Black people.
Sure.
Would you say that you've experienced that? So being a Black child in a very white suburb, was that difficult? Did you experience racism? Much of it? None of it?
Well, I'd say there's a typical way that people picture racism through children. And that's not what I've experienced. Like, that's not I haven't experienced like the outcast way of like living, but it's like, it's more subtle, I guess. Cause nowadays their parents know that it's wrong to be racist. At least I know that they're supposed to know.
We would hope
that they know, but they probably, if they are racist, they just know that it's not correct, but they are. That's how I see it. But like, at least they know it's not right. So that mixed in with their egos and their, like, they're trying to protect themselves, like all that very complicated things through children, is just like, it's a train wreck. Like, I had to teach everybody about the N-word. Like, nobody know.
Same.
What that
isn't
was.
That a trip? Isn't that a trip?
And it's not even like when you're mature and like, and you're like in high school, it's fine, because like, if they don't know, it's like, damn, like, you know, that I can't even blame you. It's like, what it's like, what have you been doing? It's like, okay, but if like when we were like children, like people didn't care about feelings like at all. So the people are like, I was mean, like everybody was mean, and nobody cared for nothing. Like, childs are awful. So when I was like, whoa, you can't say that, that's the N-word, they were like laughing in my face, you know I mean, not getting the bigger picture. So
yeah,
I can't even get mad
there
at them.
Is a very bigger picture.
Exactly. So I can't even get mad at them because I was seeing myself as the mature one that has to teach these young childs what the N-word and racism is. So yeah. I was like, well, they'll get it when they're later. I was just telling them, like, don't say the N-word because you'll probably get beat up or something. And it made...
Trying to help you out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, I like these people. It's not even like they're trying to be racist. They just don't know. And I got that too.
It's ignorance.
Yeah, it's purely ignorance. Yeah. And I understood that. I understood that the parents maybe thought, like, everything. So I did get, like, a few racist jokes, but it never was, like, a... Like, I'm trying to get you down and get myself up by saying this racist joke type of thing. It's always like, I think this is funny. Maybe you will think too. So I'll say it. And it didn't stick. Yeah, exactly. So that's how friends are, you know, like my friends did the same thing. It's like, it's jokes until the person that is black probably it doesn't think it's funny. So
yeah,
that's how I see it. Like, there's plenty of people, like, especially nowadays, that like rappers and stuff that talk, let their white friends say the N-word because it's just a word. Because, like, they that argument I can't get behind. Like, I do not care about words. Like, you could call me anything. Like, freedom of speech is it's an extreme to me. You cannot stop freedom of speech for a couple words and stuff. So that pisses me off. So I'd say either let buddy say it or let no one say it. But letting no one say it pisses me off, because where's the freedom of speech toward that? Even if it's like...
Oh, see, I thought we... No, I'm not sure that I'm on board with,
like,
that.
If you... Like, it's like... That's the only word... You know what I mean? Like, you know how much words we've used to talk about different origins of slaves? Like, it's not the only one. We just kept that one.
You're right about that. You are right about that. Yeah, that is weird. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But the thing is, when it's said, first off, you will never hear me say it. You will never hear me say it. I don't say it the way you're saying it. Like, I don't even go with the letter. No. That's how. And I remember Maya Angelou speaking about that. Words are things. And she was speaking to Dave Chappelle. It's an amazing interview. You should see it. And it's exactly on that. And yes, we both love Dave Chappelle. And he is really, he wants to keep the right to that word, you know, and he's in front of freaking Maya Angelou. Like, it takes some balls. And she's looking at him like, child. You can't. Words are things, and they are like fabric, and it's a really charged word. And to be honest, if I were to say it, like, I don't need to say it. So, but if I were to say it and perhaps make just one person around me uncomfortable, let alone offended or saddened or triggered, or like, why do I need to say it? Why? But you're right. It can't be just one word, and it can't be part of the population. It can't. And that's for sure. Yes. But that I have a little problem with. Do you think you, of course, yes. But I mean, if we brought you up in a town that wasn't so white and so suburban, do you think it would have had a pretty big impact on you? Let's say I'm talking... School is half and half, basically. Right. Yeah. So there's a mix, you know, there's range and there's Hispanics and there's, you know, Latinos and just.
Yeah,
because I honestly, there's a part of me that would have loved it. It's just our lives didn't add up, and it's not how it happened. But and I wasn't really thinking about that when we chose where we would locate, to be honest. But do you think it would have had an impact, an important one, and if so, positive or negative or both?
And when you're saying mixed school, you're talking about America or like a hypothetical school?
No, really in America. Okay. So in Quebec, where we live, in the province of Quebec. Okay. So of course, any town, of course, nowadays or 5-6 years ago, any place that was multicultural, really, just, you know, that you would have seen yourself, because I know I suffered quite a bit quite a bit. And you know what? When you mentioned the subtle racism, it's the worst.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. We're not having hoses turned on us. Yeah, and dogs.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, of course, yes. There's no clear segregation and so forth. So it's not, I'm not complaining, of course. Obviously, it was much worse then. But I suffered from it a lot. And and you're suffering from something that you can't help.
No,
it's the color of your freaking skin, right? So I'm wondering if you would have been raised, especially you, because of the three kids, you're the only one that looks black.
Yeah.
Like me, which is interesting because it's very different for the other two that are white.
Exactly.
So basically nobody figures that one of their parents isn't Caucasian. Mm-hmm. Do you think it would have been different in household?
Of course, I think it would have been different, but in the sense of my confidence growing up, because I never felt like the beauty standard was there when I was growing up because I was black. Like there's no black people in Vogue, you know, there's no black people in my,
there is now.
Now, but it was 2006.
You know? Are you kidding? Okay, so even then, magazine, I mean, there was representation on TV and so forth.
Yeah,
you know?
TV, but like, I didn't see no, like, there was no, like, the black people in TV were Karate Kid, you know what I mean? Like, there were certain people, like, that did big movies that were black, but they were the blacks. They weren't like actors.
So very cliche role. Exactly. Okay, I understand. Yeah, that's, I mean, it's still often the case.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like for every
African-American
race.
Actors and artists will tell you that it is very, I mean, they're not getting paid as much. They're not getting the same opportunities. They're always getting offered the same role. And yes, you are the African-American. Exactly. Yeah, I understand. Okay.
Yeah. So even like through girls, like I didn't think girls would think I'm attractive just because I'm black, you know. That's the bottom line with it, because you get, like, you like to say no, but like we get our confidence from girls growing up, like mostly. So if it's not from your own self, so that didn't help either. But if I grew up like in Montreal, I guess I think it would have definitely helped with my confidence. But with like the mentality that I have right now, like the opening that I have for people and stuff, I don't think it would have, it maybe wouldn't have like made it worse, but I don't think it would have made it better, just because I believe in, like, I don't there is racism through like non-Caucasian people, so
yeah,
it's not like I would have been like not subjected to that. So
that is true. That is a valid argument.
Also being like I'm not fully black either. So there was obviously be like the that there would have been like the like there's race wars and everything. So I don't think it would have helped my mentality that much to see it as much as it would, but maybe it would have just been like I see people like from growing up to now, so maybe, I don't know. But like in primary school at least, because that's where I think people are the most like savage, like the most like no regards for people or emotions or anything is in primary school. It's like in high school you get like some morals and values, so like your own, like not the one that are inflicted by on you by God, parents and stuff. Mm-hmm. So you're painful because you do psychology like with people and stuff, so you're mean, but you're not like just straight annoying, like I don't want you to be in this room, you know. It's just like there's difference. But like kids, if I would have grew up in a fully black environment, I don't think it would have, like, it would have definitely helped me. Like, it's definitely better for me as a semi-black, I guess. But in a place where it's very multicultural and like I can't do difference between them, like in a non-racist kind of way. Like I cannot pinpoint this is black, this is white, this is Indonesian, this is Japanese. Like if I can't do that, there's obviously gonna be like a misunderstanding, I guess. Cause we fear the thing that we don't understand is what I'm trying to say.
True.
So
yeah,
until I understood what was happening and who are they and stuff, or what they are and stuff, then it maybe would have gotten way better. But I couldn't say, you know, it's more of a it's a gray area. But I do yeah. think it would have helped at bottom line.
Yeah, because I think representation is just so important. That's the thing. That's that. It's not, I mean, racism is everywhere. You're right. And absolutely there is racism, even if nobody's Caucasian in the mix. It's just, yeah. it just is. And for me, I wasn't white enough and I wasn't black enough, depending yeah, on who
exactly
I'm talking to or who I'm hanging out with. So, I mean, I love how you're answering the question because it is a gray area. It doesn't mean everything would have been hunky-dory.
Yeah.
It doesn't. It would have, I think, helped only on a very plain way of seeing it, surface level,
yeah.
that at least you're being
exactly.
represented. You're seeing yourself in other people that are just different, of course, or they look like you.
Yeah.
So you don't feel like you're clashing. And of course, you're not dealing with, you in your case, the opposite sex, maybe not thinking
sure.
you're attractive, because which was not your issue at all. But I mean that because it is what you're seeing everywhere around mm-hmm. you. So it's not an issue. So I would think they would play on your confidence on that
yeah.
aspect. But you're right. I mean, it doesn't mean that there's no racism. It doesn't mean that you're already completely allowed
yeah.
everywhere that you're entering in any room. It doesn't mean that. But in your case, basically the representation that you had was me.
Yeah.
The only I mean, thank God, but the only person that you could really look to and see yourself reflected mm-hmm. is me, which is weird because the other two probably have it a little bit easier
sure.
for different reasons, but definitely they're blending
yeah.
in, let's
yeah.
say. It's such a stupid way of seeing it, but that's the case. They don't have that issue. They see themselves in their dad, but they don't see themselves in me.
Yeah.
So it's kind of all,
yeah, yeah.
you know, trying to juggle all of that, but it's really interesting, and hopefully we'll come to a point where it is a non-issue, but I'm 45. I don't know that I'll see that
yeah.
before
yeah, yeah.
I'm gone. Unfortunately, there's something, and you're absolutely right. And I love that you get that. The fact that racism is absolute pure ignorance. It should be done.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't even be discussed. We should be dealing with all the other pressing issues, and that should be just done. But any type of marginalized portion of society, we're done.
Mm-hmm.
We're done. We, you know what, if what you're doing isn't hurting me and you're not hurting yourself, good. I'm good. That's it. But until then, I think these discussions are kind of what we need to have to kind of stay as open as we can and make sure that the future generations feel allowed in any
sure.
room. What is the, let's change the subject completely. What is the best thing that could happen to you this year?
This year?
Yeah.
The best thing is probably getting to maybe work or intern for a company that I respect and appreciate in fashion.
Yeah.
So
okay.
that would be the, but I include the 2023 too, because I see it as a
yeah, of course.
Yeah,
yes.
It's a,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a school
yeah.
year.
Yeah. It's your question. It's your answer. You can go. Yeah, you get a full 12 months. I hear you. Okay, so that is absolutely what we're wishing for you. If anybody that's listening knows somebody, you know, my son, everybody, ladies and gents, he's amazing. You mentioned, so of course, I'm gonna hop on this one. You mentioned that you've been thinking about your purpose for 13 years. He is 18, if I haven't mentioned, ladies and gents. So it's been 13 years. What is your purpose, Sean?
My purpose personally is to make the most out of this part of my existence, which is life.
It's a pretty big purpose.
Yeah, but it's vague, so it's easy to
it's vague. Yeah, it is very, so there's no wrong answers. Okay. Yeah,
but it's maybe like if I had to put it like probably my purpose is to die with no regrets. That is the purpose. Like not maybe a... not no regrets, but like no things that I wish I did, or like no feeling of, oh, I could have done that better, or I could have fixed that, or I could have like, I don't want that. I want to be content. And even if I did nothing from this year to when I die, like if I get to the point where I'm happy with the life I've accomplished, like that's my purpose. That's I'll die a happy man. That's what I'm.
Oh, I so wish it. I so wish it for you. So we're just about at the end. I have a small surprise for you at the end, but well, it's for me. It's for me. It's for me. It's not even it's again. It's open. Is there anything that we haven't discussed? We've been talking for 4.5 hours. This is going to be a very cool editing process for me. Is there anything that you think you feel like you would want to mention that you basically anything that you would think later on, I regret not having spoken about this or that she didn't ask me about that? Is there anything that we haven't brushed on that you would like to say for everybody listening to us today?
But I'd say it's mostly for teenagers.
Yeah, please. Yeah,
I think they need help, and I'd say, people have to learn to not only discover themselves but be passionate about it. Like, get involved in yourself as much as you get involved in anything. Like, if you like this artist and you're ready to like give big, like it's a hypothetical question, and you're ready to give like big stuff to meet them or like get anything close to them, I'd say if you're able to do that for somebody else that you don't know, that is probably not ever going to be like you think they are, then you should be able to do that for yourself, because it's like you discover a new person. It's not even you, it's the child that's been growing inside of you with those interests that you've forgotten and those and weird things that you do that you don't assume, and the things that you're ashamed of, and all of that is the thing that should make yourself passionate about yourself, because there are things that make you different and you should want to feel different and not like the norm, because the norm is fake. And that's how I see this weird like confidence thing. So yeah,
that's the perfect answer. And I know if you'll help me with that, if a few 10 to 24 year olds listen to this, I know you'll be helping a few, so thank you for that. Now for something that I've always wanted to do. You probably don't know this man. His name was, because unfortunately he's passed, James Lipton. He was the host of an amazing show, Interviews, that he did with actors, but basically any actor has gone on this show, right? So the name of the show was Inside the Actor's Studio, and James Lipton is a legend, or was a legend. And the best part of that show that I listened to religiously was at the end. He had always these 10 questions that are, again, legendary. They're legendary. And I'm going to ask you those questions. And it's just fire one word.
All right. First things that come to my mind.
First thing that comes to your mind, and it's one word for each.
One word. All right.
Okay. So he never used to explain this because he didn't have to, because anybody that was going there knew, and most of them probably prepared their questions, which you weren't able to, because of course I'm teething and I didn't tell you the questions. So 10 questions. I'm going to fire them up. You give me one word. You ready? Okay.
Good.
What is your favorite word?
More.
What is your least favorite word?
Pineapple. I'm saying the first thing
that's the weirdest. That is the weirdest answer. What turns you on?
I'll think about this one because it's
you're cheating.
Yeah, but I was gonna say balloons, so I'll think about it.
We're going with balloons. All right, too late. Balloons. What turns you off?
Egotistical people. Okay. Ego turns me off.
I'll go with that. Good. What sound or noise do you love?
The thunder thing that you shake, the thunder sheet of metal. That makes a thunder sound.
Oh, okay. What sound or noise do you hate?
It's like a tube, a plastic tube that you swing. It makes like a that thing annoys me.
You hate.
I can't.
I'm learning so much. Okay. What is your favorite curse word?
Fuck.
Yeah. It's the best. It's the only right answer. Oh, I feel so close to you. Okay. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
A cook.
Really? Yeah. Okay. What profession would you not like to do?
A firefighter.
And the last one, and I'll have a little last one. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates? I'll give you a few words for that one.
It's not appropriate, but I'll say it's not a phrase, but I want him to be like I want him to talk like a black uncle. That's how I want him, like the typical black uncle. I want him to say the things that a typical black uncle would say to you when you enter his house or something.
You need to help me out. What would my black uncle, because I don't have him, so what will I don't know him. What would he say? Give me an example.
It's like,
because I really want to know.
Hey, what's up, little dude? Like it's like a New Yorker thing. It's not even like a black guy. It's more of like an Italian guy, like the typical New Jersey Italian guy. That's how I want him to talk to me. It's comforting. Okay. I don't know. It's more of a voice thing. I don't care what he says. Just the tone of voice is more important.
So your representation of God is really cool.
Yeah, God is cool. If he's not, I'm not going in.
If he's not, you're not going in. Wow, that's a perfect way to end this. Thank you. Okay, one last question. It's not James Lipton's, it's mine. Are you okay?
Yeah, I am okay.
Promise?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much for your time,
no
Sean.
Problem.
Will you come back if everybody loves you as much as I think they do?
Sure, I'll come back.
They will? Yeah, okay. So thank you for listening, everybody. This concludes this two-part mini-series during which my son was gracious enough to come and join me on the couch and share his experience as a young adult dealing with the cards he was dealt and make the best of it. I absolutely loved the time we shared together, just like I love every conversation I get the pleasure of having with him. These moments are truly precious, and I know how important they are in preserving that vital line of communication. I also know that not all teens, or parents for that matter, have this privilege. I know that many parents, also doing their absolute best, have a much harder time reaching their kids and struggle to support them, even with the best of intentions. And so for everyone and anyone that could benefit, I thought it would be great to let you in on one of our exchanges, an exchange between an 18-year-old that is just like all the others in his own unique way and his incredibly proud mom. I hope you found some value in today's episode. If you did, please come and join us at The Pact 2022 on Facebook and Instagram. And until next time, have a great week.